to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Radio. I'm Andrea Kay.
I'm Al Arias.
And I'm Bob Ryan. We're so glad you're here today. We have a great show, and, you know, enough chit-chat. Oh, can you, Andy, can you grab me my phone real quick? Just something, I want to get it just absolutely really fast. All right, this is something that drove me crazy this morning. I heard some kind of flash on the news about, you know, some horrible statistic about more foreclosures and home ownership rates and all that. If you look up the statistics on home ownership since 1960, in 1960 we had 62.1%. It didn't vary much. In 1970 we were up to 64%. In 1980 we were up to 65%. In 1990 we were back down to 63.9%, 64% basically. And in 2000 we were at 67%. We peaked at 69%, and then in 2009 we were at 67.4%. So what they do is they take the absolute numbers of foreclosures, because right. We have so many more people and so many more houses, and then they take percentages of the absolute numbers. Okay. And, you know, the volume of foreclosures, not the percentage, but our homeowner percentage. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, that's really weird. Is that on your end, or Jeff, or ours? Oh, there we go. We're back. Yeah. Okay, good. Whew. Oh, the audience is hearing nothing. Okay, audience, never mind. I thought you were hearing what we were hearing, and it just didn't sound good. Okay. Anyhow, my point is that homeownership hasn't changed that much in terms of percentage. In fact, we're better off today than we have been over the last 40 years, minus a couple of, like, little blips in this. So let's get on with our show. We have, in just a few minutes, Holly Berkeley coming up. She works in an area that I think almost all of us are interested in, and that is the area of how we use social media today, especially in our businesses. She's written a couple of books, another one on the way, and I think you will really enjoy that segment, especially if you're wondering, you know, how in the world do you use this monster we have now? Do you ride the back of the tiger here? I mean, it's just a really big deal. After that, Eric Lane is with us from Loose Forward. He's an author, attorney, and blogger, and focuses on, again, helping firms create portfolios out of their intellectual property assets, which is getting more and more difficult as time goes on. And lastly, Sam Benham is here from Toast. They're a catering company, and as a catering company might do, which is really cool, he brought in a spread befitting of a major event today. So I've had some veggie burgers. I've got a roast beef sandwich sitting over there I'm drooling for, waiting to get to after the show. So you will want to hear his story, because if nothing else, his food is amazing. Before we get to our guest, Al Arias is back with us today. Al, thanks for coming back to our microphones. We miss you when you're gone.
It's always fun to be here.
Now, we're smack dab in the middle of tax season, right?
Yeah, I was still grinding at 4 a.m. this morning.
You were grinding at 4 a.m. this morning.
Yeah.
I was getting up at 4 a.m. this morning.
Yeah. It's unfortunate my eyes are red, I'm sure.
Yeah. My alarm goes off at 4:45, but I run out of sleep at 4. So I just wake up, and it's like, what do I do now? It's like, my mom passed, so my dad's back east, so I call him. You know, it's like, Dad, I don't know what else to do, so hello.
Well, you could call Al, see if he's got anything for you to
do.
Yeah,
he's on his way home. Okay, now, a lot of people look at taxes as a really necessary evil that we have to deal with on a regular basis. It's very complex. It's difficult to deal with, and I think it's not a do-it-yourself task, like estate planning. Those are two things I don't think you should do yourself. Well, I don't think you should do investments yourself either. But anyhow, the main thing is you find things and create strategies that the average person would never be able to conceive of in their wildest dreams because of the breadth and depth of your experience.
Isn't that fun?
It is.
It's fun to me.
Yeah. Well, what you learn from one client, you can take and apply to others. One of the things you've used quite often in the past are multiple corporate strategies, allowing the flexibility of having more than one corporation. And you do that even for smaller companies, correct?
Yes. Well, most of my clients are middle market.
And so middle market,
have,
you mean?
I don't have giant clients.
But, and by middle market, you mean what revenue range?
It goes from like $3 million a year to $100 million.
To $100 million. Yeah. Okay. A lot of people would think middle market might be a lot less than that. But, it, you know, companies up to $100 million are still definitely in the ballpark. And you work with presidents of companies that run in the billions. But you work with the presidents, right?
Right.
Okay. The multiple corporate strategy is one that we've talked quite a bit about. Also, alternative minimum tax we've talked quite a bit about in the past. Is that still the evil it was a couple of years ago, or have they fixed anything?
Well, the patch?
Yeah, the Band-Aid.
The patch is worth maybe $1,500.
Oh, so they really didn't fix it?
No.
They did nothing to fix it?
No.
Okay.
They did make the exclusion greater, but the effect of the increased exclusion is very minor.
All right. And I think the thing that, and since we have a full plate today, we'll, if we can get some time, we'll come back to it. But I think the bottom line and the takeaway from this is that there's so many strategies out there that the average person's not going to find in a tax book. They're not going to find in one of those guides. They're not going to find in the software. They need to call you and sit down with you and talk, and there's still time to fix a lot of things in 2010, believe it or not. 619-296-2123. 296-2123 in the 619 area code. We're going to shift gears a little bit to Holly Berkley. Holly, welcome to our microphones at BizTalk.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Tell us a little bit about Holly Berkley and your role as an author and consultant.
Sure. So I help businesses come up with their social media strategies and use the internet to help increase leads, their exposure, their brand awareness, online PR. So it's really internet marketing is one of the most trackable forms of media out there. You get real-time feedback versus waiting for a magazine ad to run or a news story to run. You're going to see.
No, wait a minute. We count our listeners.
Right.
So we know exactly how many listeners are listening at any one point in time. We had 13 as of 2 minutes ago,
right.
And one just tuned in, so we now have 14 listeners.
That's what the crackling was in our ears.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So we're trackable. We know exactly how many listeners are listening, right?
But do you know what they're saying and what they're thinking and if they're telling their friends about you? At this time.
Right? Let's hope they are. I tell everybody to roll down their window at a stoplight and say, hey, tune into AM 1000 KCEO, right?
Yeah.
Word of mouth.
Yeah. Word of mouth. One time we got 16 out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trackable. But one of the detriments of the social media, it's come on us like a tidal wave.
Mm-hmm.
It's come on us so fast that we don't know where to, we don't know whether to ride the wave or run.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
It's definitely not going away. So businesses need to get involved, even if it's
so we need to ride the wave.
You need to ride the wave.
Okay. And now that we need to determine what kind of board we want. We need to determine where we're going to sit on the wave. Well, that's a really dumb analogy because I'm not a surfer, so I can't think of any place else to go with it. We could have picked another analogy that would have been a lot better. But anyhow, my point is, for most business owners, it's mm-hmm. so confusing to mm-hmm. try to figure out where to go and what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem that exists is that very few companies have an appeal to basically every American.
Mm-hmm.
So we're appealing to a vertical market or a horizontal market in a geographic area, but our appeal in what we offer is to a focused mm-hmm. area. Can you more accurately define that with social media versus other kinds of marketing and advertising and PR?
Definitely. You can get so niche-oriented on these different social media sites. So just because you're on Facebook or you're buying Google ads doesn't mean you're marketing your services to the whole world. You can get very targeted. You can specify your ads to only show up by certain zip codes. You can even do hobbies by age groups. You can buy ads on MSN or Yahoo to only show up to people between the ages of 30 and 40 that live in San Diego. At this
can
zip
you
code.
Get me a list of people that will buy my product or service on the first call? I want to get that specific.
Oh, I want to be that specific.
Huh?
I want to be that specific.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether you can get that specific or not, but his second call would be okay.
Uh-huh.
It'd be a little sloppier list, but I could go with that.
Uh-huh.
Can you give us some examples of what you're talking about? You don't have to name names of companies you've worked with, but give us an example of kind of the company you went into and, you know, change the industry, change the names to protect the innocent, but describe how you help them narrow and focus and get a better result.
Well, for example, I'm working for a cosmetic surgeon right now who we're doing a lot of different social media, but you're learning that even for the different cosmetic surgeries people look for, they're using the social media in different ways. For example, pay-per-click and Facebook isn't necessarily the best way to reach the after weight loss people, the people that are getting the lap band surgeries and things like that. They're on the message boards. There's a lot. There's a whole group of really targeted message boards out there. And so by...
So if somebody's considering lap band surgery, mm-hmm. one of the things a lot of people will do was start looking at blogs and message boards and things to kind of feel out what other people have done and their mm-hmm. experiences rather than go directly to the website of a plastic surgeon originally.
Exactly.
And you can call that out.
Especially health-related, any kind of big purchases, people are going to look at a lot of times the comments and the reviews on these social sites before they even get to your actual website. They want to see what everybody else thinks about it before they contact you. So it's important that you not only have a presence, but you're reacting. And what I help people with is their online reputation management. So to make sure that there's not a lot of negative press out there. And if there is, you fix it. You find those customers who are unhappy and give them an incentive to make it right.
Yeah, I think there's a big pizza company that's doing that right now. They're you know, saying we had a lot of bad publicity mm-hmm. and we're fixing it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're doing that on a national basis.
Right. Yeah, we're talking to Holly Berkeley today. She's an expert in social media networking, how to use Facebook for more than just a way to, you know, reconnect with your high school friends.
Mm-hmm.
So this reputation, that's become a big problem out there for people, hasn't it? You know, issues with their reputation from Facebook. I mean, there's some pros and cons to these social networking sites.
It is, and you can't just push a message out there. You have to actually be listening and be ready to respond. Google Alerts is a really easy thing for businesses to do. It's a free service. Just go to googlealerts.com. You can type in your company name or certain keywords that are related to a product that you're selling. And anytime somebody on the social web talks about you, you'll get an email. And so you'll know, oh, I can respond to that. I can be in the
middle of that. So instead of getting a list of 1,000 or 2,000 people that's really hard for you to call through and know what to do with, mm-hmm. you're going to get a smaller list, but you have an action plan. You know what to do with these people because you know a lot more about them.
Yes.
Okay. That I'm hoping the answer was yes.
Yes.
Because if I had said all that and you said no, I'd be really embarrassed. Okay. Two books out now, one on the way, Low Budget Online Marketing for Small Business and Marketing in the New Media. Both Holly Berkeley, author. And if you want to check out the books, marketinginthenewmedia.com. marketinginthenewmedia.com is the website. And do you know the name of the third book? Have you named it yet?
It's a Social Media in Action.
Social Media in Action.
Mm-hmm.
And these are for mostly businesses that haven't been able to successfully call out what they want from social media or not using it at all, maybe.
You know, it's a little bit of a best practices, a little bit of a case studies of what people are doing. It changes all the time.
Well, so let's talk about best uh-huh. practices. What are some of the common tips that maybe some of the listeners would like to know as a result of hearing you on the air? I mean, they're starving for this. So what? Give me something I can walk away with as an idea.
One thing is you should not be running a Facebook profile for your business. It's actually against the terms of service of Facebook, and they can shut you down, and you can lose all of your friends that you've built up. So you need to take the time to set up a Facebook fan page for your business. And those.
Oh, is that why the businesses advertise differently?
Mm-hmm.
You don't become a friend, you become a fan?
You like the business.
Oh, you like uh-huh. the business. That's uh-huh. what it is. Okay.
And there's not really an easy way to convert your profile page into a fan page at this time, but it's important to start doing that. There's a lot of benefits to having that fan page. One of the main ones being is that search engines can get to it. So all your updates are no longer password protected and only your friends can see them. So it's putting it out there and giving it more longevity to each one of those
Andrew,
posts.
Would you be a like for me? Because I don't want to have my fan thing out there and have nobody like me.
I'll like you, Bob.
Thank you. Okay.
Andy will like you too.
Okay. Well, I got two likes already. So Not going to ask Al.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't offer, did he?
No. In the books, one of the things I like about your books, just by seeing them, is often books that cover these kinds of topics are huge. Mm-hmm. You know, they're 700 pages. They're like an encyclopedia. And a lot of that's boilerplate reference material that obviously they put in the book for, you know, resource. But your books are readable. Mm-hmm. They're in plain English. They're for the business person, and they're not, you know, 4-week reads. You know, mm-hmm. you can get what you want out of them in a very short time.
Yeah, you know, I'm a business owner. I know business owners, they don't have a whole lot of time. They just want to get the most core information they need to get their businesses running, to get the leads that they're looking for. And so I've really condensed it. I give people the information that they need to get started right now in these things.
10 years ago, this job didn't exist.
You're right.
Yeah, so you probably didn't, as a little girl, think you were going to grow up to be an author of social media networking, because even as young as you are, as a little girl, there wasn't social media.
That's true. It's a very new medium.
What got you into this?
I started with the website designing. So I was doing that and the internet marketing, and it just came from there. My background's really in search engine optimization, so making sure that your website is found on the internet, and social media was a good segue to that.
I think if I were a kid and said that, my mom would have washed out my mouth with soap. Yeah, search engine optimization, what's that? That sounds dirty. You know, if anything sounded like what didn't fit in the English language, I got my mouth washed. That's not true. But anyhow, what are some of the other things that you see businesses mm-hmm. when you go in and talk to them, and you just want to smack yourself on the forehead or smack them on the forehead and say, this is just so wrong. You're wasting so much of your time, mm-hmm. energy, and money doing it this way.
Well, it's really, social media is about a dialogue. It's not about just posting your latest press release or product info or saying buy now and posting it on Facebook. That's the quickest way to have listeners tune out. So you really want to provide valuable information, try to be unselfish, providing a knowledge and things that are going to help your audience make that buying decision. And so it's really about the customer and responding.
To the customer.
So having a conversation about
it. So you see a lot of people using social media, and what they do is they keep putting up information, mm-hmm. but they're not interacting with the audience.
Exactly. And the biggest thing, picture social media as the world's biggest focus group. So you can listen in on what people are thinking about your brand, about your products. And so not taking advantage of that is a big mistake that companies will make. So you need to listen to what people are saying, make it right, respond, and you can make better products that way.
Is this the kind of investment in hiring you that a company can actually look at their return on investment over time? Mm-hmm. I mean, they know it's, obviously you don't do this for free, it's your business, so, you know, there's a charge to doing this. Mm-hmm. Can they actually see the results of what you do? Because you said it is a trackable uh-huh. kind of event. Is that part of what happens when you work with companies, or is that not?
No, that's definitely what I do. So everything's trackable, and so we're going to find out. We use, you know, something simple as Google Analytics, another free tool. So you can track, okay, the people from Twitter are the ones buying X many products. People on Facebook are buying this many products. And so here's the way we should spend more time and more energy. And so you can really track everything that's happening on the
social
web. Are
you ever surprised? In other words, you design a strategy mm-hmm. and you think it's either really going to work well mm-hmm. and it falls on its face, or one that you go, you know, I just want to throw it out there and see because I don't know, and then it's a big hit. Are you ever surprised?
You know, you do get surprised because it's always changing, but that's what's neat about social media is that it happens so fast that you can tweak messaging and change things and try a different photo and you can get these results very easily.
What's the most unusual request you've had to optimize?
Oh gosh, you know what? I can't think of that.
You don't want to tell us, do you?
Well, the scary thing I heard about is the dialogue. I mean, you have to have an employee burning on dialoguing. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, I think it's a significant. It feels like a really significant investment if you're engaging in dialogue.
Well, and it's important. A lot of people think, oh, I'm just going to hire my son or my daughter or an intern to handle this. Oh, it's social media. The college people, they know Facebook. But this is representing your brand. You really need a PR person or somebody that cares about your business to be out there responding. It's not just, oh, let's get the intern out there responding on Facebook.
And so no matter what the investment, though, because it is trackable, they can see their return on investment.
Yes.
Whether it's an employee doing dialogue or whether it's your cost or whether it's other kinds of costs. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I really like about what you do. It becomes a knowable event over time anyway. Maybe day one you can't tell, but day two, you know, it starts to come back in and you can recognize it.
But if you're fishing for whales, you know, how many are you going to get?
Yep. So. Holly Berkley, thank you so much. The books are Low Budget Online Marketing for Small Business and
Marketing in the New Media.
Where do you see that?
Right underneath the other book.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Thank God for her.
Thank you. And the website would be marketinginthenewmedia.com. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Andrea Kay.
I'm Al Arias.
Out on the water today, a small company said thank you to their clients in a big way. The Hornblower way. Truth be told, a customized event on a Hornblower yacht had everything they needed to really impress their clients. The cruise began with fresh appetizers and margaritas. Then a fully catered lunch served by a smiling staff, all accompanied by the sounds of a mariachi band. Where on earth did you find time to plan this? The clients asked. The president smiled, knowing full well that Hornblower took care of everything. Overtime, she said. But hey, you're worth it. Today was just like every other day on a Hornblower yacht. There was nothing typical about it. Hornblower cruises and events. Get away from it all, just for a day.
Visit Birch Aquarium at Scripps in La Jolla. It's fun, it's educational, and its ocean views, inside and out, are incredible. Perched on a hilltop overlooking renowned Scripps Institution of Oceanography, this seaside aquarium museum features a dazzling variety of marine life from the cold waters of the Pacific Northwest to the tropical South Pacific. See their newest exhibit, Secrets of the Seahorse, and discover 13 species of seahorses and their relatives, a seahorse breeding nursery, and interactive exhibits. Go on a virtual journey with Morphus, Motion Ride, touch the living tide pool animals with docents, or learn about oceanography's history and current research in the museum. For more information, visit them at www.aquarium.ucsd.edu or call 858-534-FISH. That's 858-534-FISH.
Without the entrepreneur, dreams would die in our heads. Without the entrepreneur, good enough wouldn't sound bad. Without the entrepreneur, this radio station quite possibly wouldn't exist. At City National Bank, we believe in the power of the entrepreneur, supporting California's entrepreneurs, their businesses, and their families with complete financial solutions has been our number one priority for over 50 years. Solutions like City National's award-winning business products and services that help improve cash flow and take measures to protect entrepreneurs from fraud. And introducing City National e-Deposit. Now businesses not located near one of our many banking offices can submit electronic deposits simply, securely, and instantly. To learn more about how California's premier private and business bank can meet all of your financial needs, talk to a City National banker or visit us at cnb.com. City National Bank, the way up. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Radio. I'm Andrea Kay.
I'm Al Arias.
And I'm Bob Ryan. We're so glad to have you with us today. We have a really full lineup, so we want to get right back to our guest as quickly as we can. One of the things I did want to talk to you about is a lot of us are very, very nervous about going to the dentist. And I have a tip for you that I think will make your life a lot better. You want to call Dr. William Neff, DDS. He's got three offices in the North County area. He is amazing. And my ex-wife went there, and she even raved about him. And she doesn't rave about anybody.
Really?
No. Not even me. Can you believe that? After 30 years, yeah. She doesn't rave about me. 760-633-4000. 4488, 633-4488. Dr. William Neff, N-E-F-F. Not too many dentists in the area with the last name of Neff. In fact, I think he's probably the only one. So it's pretty easy for you to remember and check that out. Again, don't forget, there's still time to take care of your 2010 taxes with Al. He's got magic dust and some special water he can sprinkle on it and make all your problems go away.
Yay, well, Al.
You forgot about the S on my chest.
Yes, the S on his chest. Yeah, you get him to take off his shirt. There's an S tattooed right there on his chest. 619-296-2123. I would say he makes the IRS quake at the knees, but that might be going overboard a little bit. Don't want to get a call from them today. All right, Loose Forward, a very, very prestigious law firm in San Diego. You notice I didn't just say very, I said very, very. Eric Lane is with us. He's a senior associate with the company. Eric, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Tell us briefly about Loose Forward. It's got a long and rich history, so I know you could spend a long time doing that, but what's kind of the skinny on them?
Sure. Loose Forward is one of the oldest firms in San Diego, as you alluded to. We have a full-service legal practice. We provide corporate, tax, real estate, litigation, environmental, and intellectual property, which is what I do. And we, particularly relevant to what I do, we have a very active and large and diverse renewable energy practice.
One of the things I think we have not seen in at least our lifetimes, that most of us middle-aged that have seen renewable energy come on the scene, because when we were kids, there was no such thing as renewable energy. If there was, it wasn't paid attention to. We had enough oil to provide for everything. We see that going away. We see it in jeopardy. So renewable energy is a very, very hot topic. We know we have to fix the problem with clean, renewable energy rather than oil. So 150-year tradition has got to go away. We've got to replace it with something. There are so many ideas on the market today. Everything from wind farms to capturing wave motion as an energy source, to solar, to whatever. It just goes on and on and on. You help people not only protect these assets, but use the asset to actually increase the value of their business.
That's right. I'm a registered U.S. patent attorney and an intellectual property lawyer, and I counsel a lot of clean tech companies and help them protect their technology so that, you know, in a lot of these technology companies, particularly clean technology, innovation is what gives them a competitive advantage. And there, as you alluded to, there's a wide diversity in clean technology. Clean
right.
technology is renewable energy generation. It's energy efficiency, like LED light bulbs. It's conservation technology, desalination, all kinds of things. So what that means is you have to protect your technology to differentiate yourself from your competitors, and that's what I help them do. And you need,
you know, I'm imagining that most of these companies are founded by scientists. You have to have some kind of technical background to figure out how to, you know, do the things you're talking about, convert things into electricity. I know how to convert a battery into electricity. You know, you put it in the device.
That's right.
That was a joke. That was supposed to be funny. Al, you weren't even listening. Anyhow.
I'm writing notes.
Yes. All right. So you have a scientist or a technical person, engineer, that has created something, and then you sit down with them, and now a whole new world opens up before them that they probably maybe thought about and heard about, but didn't really get the full grasp of it. When you sit down and the full weight of this protection and asset is explained to them, are they often surprised by how complex and technical and intricate it can be?
Well, I think they intuitively understand that there's a lot of value in their technology. Often they don't know how to protect it, and that's where I come in. I've been writing, publishing, and researching intellectual property issues in clean technology at my blog, greenpatentblog.com, for several years now. And now I've turned a lot of the research that I've done into a book that you have in front of you, this
Yep.
Clean Tech Intellectual Property, which is, as far as I know, the first and only comprehensive study of intellectual property issues in clean technology.
I guess my question, and I know that most people, when they invent something, know that they need to protect it because they're inventors and you hear about protecting your invention. But there's a lot more to it just by how you phrase things when you apply for a patent and how, you know, so that you don't lose grasp of that. I guess my question was, are the business owners surprised at how detailed and technical it can be when they're trying to protect their asset?
Yeah, they're not always aware of
how because I know the public's
detail.
Not.
That's right. A lot of detail has to go into a patent application, a lot of care, and a lot of expertise to increase your odds of getting a patent granted, because it's not so easy to get a patent granted. And one of the unique issues in clean technologies is much of the technology today is adapted from prior technology. For instance, solar cell manufacturing, they use techniques and manufacturing processes that were used in the semiconductor industry. So you're now taking an established process, a known process, and using it for a different purpose, and that raises issues and can make getting a patent difficult. So you need a patent attorney who both is well-versed in patent law, but also knows the technology area and the industry so that
Because a mistake can cost a company their entire future if their idea is taken over by especially a larger company. Well, one of the things I think a lot of inventors fear, and by the way, we're talking to Eric Lane from Loose Forward. His book, Clean Tech Intellectual Property, is out now. One of the things I think a lot of people are worried about is there are a lot of huge companies in this country and around the world that would maybe love to get their hands on a new idea. So you come out with a great idea. You spend your life savings, your credit cards, your parents' credit cards, your mortgage on your house, everything to get this idea launched, and only to find out that a year or two later, a big company has come along and made a similar product, and they've got a marketing budget for that product bigger than your entire company. That's the kind of thing that you need to be worried about with a younger, newer startup inventor, correct?
That is one of the things, yes. And the best way to protect yourself is to get a patent application on file so that you are you have established, put your stake in the ground and established as of the date of the filing of that patent application that technology is yours. And if anybody wants to commercialize that technology, they have to come to you.
Now, the rumor among most citizens, lay people that are not attorneys, is that all somebody has to do is change one little aspect of it, and now they can market it as a different product. Is that true? Or do they have to substantially change it?
They have to change it in a fairly substantial way.
So you can't just paint a different color?
No, and you can't just add something to it. You have to, you know, if an invention has certain features, you have to materially change one or more of those features, or do it without some of those features. You can't just take an invention, add something to it, and then
be
free to practice it on your own.
So you can't take a four-propeller windmill and make it five propellers, and now you're off and running.
Probably not.
Yeah,
no.
Okay. So correctly done, a patent or trademark or copyright or whatever we're using as a protection will give us a fair amount of protection. What about the wild, wild west of overseas? You've had companies like Microsoft saying, you know, we're not sure we even want to be in China. And this was a while ago. We're not sure we even want to be in China because they've got so many copies of it. It hits the shelves in China and the streets over there before we even get it to the dealers and citizens here in the United States.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm seeing a lot of renewable energy facilities going up in places like India and China, and it's intellectual property that's helping that happen. There are, for example, one of the things I talk about in my book is a startup called eSolar that makes concentrating solar power plants. They have international patent applications. They have nascent patent protection in China. And
what's nascent patent protection? It means the opposite?
No. What it means is they are positioned to file their patent applications in China and be protected there. They haven't yet done so.
Okay,
but they
so
have
nascent
a, they have a
is
time
kind
period.
Of like a temporary
placeholder. They've filed
okay.
an international placeholder.
Placeholder. Okay.
And they have signed exclusive licensing deals with partners in China and India that are going to build very large solar power plants. And it's hard to imagine a partner getting involved in a project of that scale without some exclusivity or assurance of exclusivity right. in their home market, and that's what the patents provide.
So the governments are recognizing, the governments of these nations are recognizing that they need to bring their countries into the new century and honor the world laws, or they're not going to have people developing products that are going to be marketable in their country.
Absolutely. China, even the Chinese government, even subsidizes the cost of patent applications.
Yeah, and if you think about it, you have villages that are spread out that are 500 miles from any other village. Stringing an electrical line to them or a gas line is almost impossible. So to have a renewable, clean source right on the spot is going to be kind of the cool thing of the future. What's, and I know this is really hard for you because you probably see tons of applications and ideas on a regular basis. What is lighting your fire right now? What gets you excited when you think about the new technology? Is there anything out there that when you think about it, it brings a smile to your face and you go, you know, that's really super cool?
Well, I'm excited about both things. I'm both technology and the process. I like the process of planning the patent applications and patent strategy. So on the technology side, I'm real excited about electric vehicles. I can't wait to get myself
electric vehicles.
I can't wait to get myself a Nissan Leaf. I can't wait for
a true electric, right?
True,
you're not talking about
electric,
a hybrid, but
that's
a true
right.
plug-in
that's
electric.
Right. I want a true plug-in electric, and I'm excited for electric charging stations to go up all across the country. That really excites me. And on the process side, there are many exciting opportunities all around the world for clean tech patents. There, many countries, the UK, US, Korea, Australia, have expedited patent application processes for green technology patent applications. So you can, in Korea, you can get a patent in less than a month, and then you can do that in various countries around the world.
Wow.
And you can, what used to be a process that took 4 or 5 more years to get international patent protection can now be done in just under a year in green technologies. And,
so
that's, and that is fantastic.
I see where your excitement lies. It's not just in the technology, but the fact that we can bring it to market and protect it.
That's right.
A lot faster than we used to.
And that's crucial.
You can see why. If there's too many roadblocks, people just aren't going to go down that road. Eric Lane is an attorney at Loose Forward. He's a blogger and an author. His book, Clean Tech, Intellectual Property, Ecomarks, Green Patents, and Green Innovation is out now, Oxford Publishing. Check it out, greenpatentblog.com. So when you say you blog, do you actually interact with people that have questions, or are you putting out information on out to the public?
Both. I'm putting out information on a regular basis. I've been doing that for
well, see, I didn't need to interview you to ask my questions. Then I could have just gone on
you
your blog.
Just gone on the website.
Yeah, because this is how I get all my questions answered. Otherwise, I got to pay you, what, $600 an hour or something? So, yeah.
It's
a cheap way to get attorneys to tell me things, right?
I can give you a discount.
Okay. Yeah, if I have an attorney, a question for an attorney, I just interview them, and then I don't have to pay. Why do you think Al's been on? It's all my accounting questions I get done, right?
None of this is legal advice, Bob.
Yeah, okay, that's true. Yeah, but I can sneak by with it. So the future is looking not just bright, but it's
green.
It's essential. It's green. Okay. Anyhow, we got to go. We're out of time, and I wish we had more time, as we do with all of our guests. But there's no choice in this matter. We got to go this direction.
That's right.
Eric Lane, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Clean Tech Intellectual Property. Check it out. Up next, we're going to talk to the owner of Toast Catering, Sam Benham. And he brought along quite a bit of food that I've been eating on the breaks. And wow, is it good. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Andrea Kay.
I'm Al Arias.
Stay with us.
Without the entrepreneur, dreams would die in our heads. Without the entrepreneur, good enough wouldn't sound bad. Without the entrepreneur, this radio station quite possibly wouldn't exist. At City National Bank, we believe in the power of the entrepreneur. Supporting California's entrepreneurs, their businesses, and their families with complete financial solutions has been our number one priority for over 50 years. Solutions like City National's award-winning business products and services that help improve cash flow and take measures to protect entrepreneurs from fraud. And introducing City National e-Deposit. Now businesses not located near one of our many banking offices can submit electronic deposits simply, securely, and instantly. To learn more about how California's premier private and business bank can meet all of your financial needs, talk to a City National banker or visit us at cnb.com. City National Bank, the way up. Member FDIC.
Visit Birch Aquarium at Scripps in La Jolla. It's fun, it's educational, and its ocean views, inside and out, are incredible. Perched on a hilltop overlooking renowned Scripps Institution of Oceanography, this seaside aquarium museum features a dazzling variety of marine life from the cold waters of the Pacific Northwest to the tropical South Pacific. See their newest exhibit, Secrets of the Seahorse, and discover 13 species of seahorses and their relatives, a seahorse breeding nursery, and interactive exhibits. Go on a virtual journey with Morphus, Motion Ride, touch the living tide pool animals with docents, or learn about oceanography's history and current research in the museum. For more information, visit them at www.aquarium.ucsd.edu or call 858-534-FISH. That's 858-534-FISH.
Out on the water today, a small company said thank you to their clients in a big way. The Hornblower way. Truth be told, a customized event on a Hornblower yacht had everything they needed to really impress their clients. The cruise began with fresh appetizers and margaritas, then a fully catered lunch served by a smiling staff, all accompanied by the sounds of a mariachi band. Where on earth did you find time to plan this? The clients asked. The president smiled, knowing full well that Hornblower took care of everything. Overtime, she said. But hey, you're worth it. Today was just like every other day on a Hornblower yacht. There was nothing typical about it. Hornblower cruises and events. Get away from it all, just for a day.
Welcome back to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Radio. I'm Andrea Kay.
I'm Al Arias.
And I am eating Bob Ryan. Next guest runs a catering company called Toast Catering, and he brought with him a wide array of foods that we have been sampling, and so far I have downed a veggie burger.
It's actually
an hors d'oeuvre.
Tomato burger.
Tomato burger. And a roast beef sandwich, and I think, Andrea, you are tasting the braised...
Hoisin braised short ribs.
So hey, savoring hoisin
braised
short ribs.
They've been braised for more than 3 hours.
Sookie now.
Nice and fork tender.
What does sookie mean?
That means I'm enjoying it.
Oh, okay. You have to interpret for me.
That's
pleasure. It is still...
That's the Southern Belle speaking.
Well, it's Mardi Gras, so she's been all right. Mardi Gras on me lately, you know?
Yes.
That explains it.
Yeah.
I even brought beads to work.
And you went out on the balcony.
Yeah. Tried to get her to go downstairs, but she said, nah, we'll just stay up here.
Yeah, at least it's fun.
Okay. Anyhow, don't forget to call Al. Sit down with him and at least go over your plan. Which I'm betting 99% of you listening don't have a plan for your taxes. I do, simply because Al is my tax advisor. So you want to give him a call at 619-296-2123. Sam Benham. You know, I have it written phonetically right in front of me, and I stumbled just long enough for you to get it in there. Benham. Sam Benham, Toast Catering. Sam, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Obviously, your food is really good.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
As long as you didn't stop at some other restaurant and pick this up on the way.
No.
Yeah, you know those shows where the guy has a girl coming over and he's cooking dinner for her, and it's out of a box, so he hides all the boxes and stuff, and you know she's really impressed that he can cook like that until she sees in the trash the meal in a box stuff. Obviously, you don't have to do that.
No, I hope not.
I'm often wondering, do you get invited over for dinner to a lot of friends' houses?
I do.
Do you? Did they ask you to bring something, like the whole meal?
they sort of expect me to bring something, but I actually enjoy going to my family or friend's house and have dinner because for once I'm not cooking.
And
it gives me a little break.
Yeah, well, I would invite you over to dinner, but it's just me living there and two guys eating alone is kind of not... Yeah, sad.
It is sad.
But anyhow, but here in a group, it's okay, though.
Yeah.
Tell us about Toast Catering.
So Toast is a full-service catering service. We do corporate events. We do weddings. We do birthday parties, anniversaries, all kind of special occasions. We do parties anywhere from 15 to a few hundred people, guests. So we've been around for about 3 years now, and we started maybe not in a good timing in the middle of a recession, but actually business has been doing really good. Every year sales have been growing. And
now my theory is if you start during a boom time, you're at risk because when the first downtime comes, you're not ready for it. You're not prepared. You don't know what it's like. You haven't been there, done that. If you start during a recession and it's already hard and you can make it then, you're going to be prepared for the cycles. You know what they're like. You have the war stories already.
Right.
So I commend you for being able to get a business off the ground during one of the worst economies we've had in a very, very long time.
And I can't wait until things get better. But if I'm surviving, I'm actually, as I said, sales have been growing. So there must be something.
Now, you had to do a little bit of market research before you started this company, right?
Well, I've been in this business for about maybe 6 or 7 years. I worked for different caterers. I worked in hotels. I worked for country clubs. So I have quite a good amount of experience with handling banquets and bigger events.
Here's my question.
Sure.
So you had the experience. You knew we were in a recession. You knew that companies are not doing as many meals and banquets and events as before. Why then? Why did you open up the doors at a tough time?
Because people were just asking me for it to cater for.
So the opportunity
events.
Was
the
there,
opportunity
and
was
you
there.
Knew you could do it.
People knew about my work, and at that time I didn't have a business, but I had people asking me, give me some business cards. I was
so you'd never run a business before.
No,
you'd always been involved in business, but you'd never run one before.
Right.
Just out of curiosity,
sure.
So you're still a relatively new entrepreneur, 3 years into this.
Exactly.
If you look back over the last 3 years. What is the biggest surprise for you when you first started this and you fast forward 3 years and you go, okay, wow, that was a shocker. I didn't know that was going to happen, or I didn't know this was part of my response. What's the biggest surprise for you as an entrepreneur?
I actually have been really surprised by the results I've been getting. I've been surprised by how much my business has been growing over the last 3 years, to be honest. So it's a good surprise.
So you didn't expect...
I was not expecting
this kind of growth in a down market.
Right.
Well, that's a happy surprise.
It is. It definitely is. And, I think part of it is trying to focus on doing things the right way. When I do events, I cook my food on site. I don't bring the food already pre-cooked. We make everything from scratch. We never buy any frozen products. All our meat or seafood or fish is, again, fresh.
The older I get and the more I eat, which go hand in hand.
Gotta love it.
The more I realize that fresh ingredients make a huge difference. The recipes are really key, but fresh ingredients and quality ingredients are a really big part of a good meal.
And people can definitely taste
difference. You can taste the difference, right?
Right.
Now, your recipes, have you collected them for years now?
Some of them, and some of them are new. I do occasionally get people asking me for special requests, things that I've never cooked before.
What's something you'd never done before that was really tricky, maybe?
For example, 2 years ago, I had my first bride, vegan bride, who asked me to
vegan
cater.
Bride.
Yes.
Okay.
To
now,
cater.
Vegan is different from vegetarian because they won't even eat byproducts of animals.
Exactly. They wouldn't eat any honey, any butter, any milk. So it's fully,
It's got to grow out of the earth, basically, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So she asked me for a vegan, to cater a vegan wedding. Mm-hmm. And she was the only vegan guest out of 150 people. But so,
like, and she wanted the whole meal, even for everybody to be vegan.
Everything for everybody.
Wow.
Appetizers, entrees.
So no butter.
Different selections of entrees. No butter. No.
What do you think about that, Al?
So that was my a good challenge I had, and I never cooked vegan before in my, you know, in my life, I would say, or maybe I've done, but never really focused on doing vegan. And so I was up for a challenge, and I came up with a vegan menu, and ever since, every year, I'm booking like two or three vegan or vegetarian weddings every year.
Just out of curiosity, how long did it take you to create that vegan menu? I mean, was it days of work, weeks of work?
No, a few days. Plus, you know, you come up with ideas, but you want to try them. You know,
Test them, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You want to cook them and, you know, have your family try them. So, yeah, but it takes maybe a week or two of work. Of course, you know, the clients, they come over and they do tastings. So they want to try the food before, you know, they book bigger events.
Yes.
And she was really pleased with the results. That was one, but I also got another request from a bride who wanted southern food, you know, food from Louisiana and New Orleans, and I've never I've never been there, you know. So,
really?
You know, I was born in Iran, I grew up in France, and I've been here for 12 years, so.
Well, Bourbon Street's a bit different.
Exactly.
Yeah. Even in most places in the United States, it's a bit different, right?
I'm sure it is. I've never been there, so I got to go and check it out.
If you go, pack a lunch, because it'll be interesting.
It's very cool.
So, you know, we did some research and came up with a menu, and they loved it. You know, again, they were comparing with other caterers, and they thought the food was pretty authentic and kind of like same style when her family was, you know, is cooks at home, and they went for it.
When you're creating a menu and you have a wide variety of items on the menu, is it ever a challenge to get the proper ingredients? I mean, are there ever shortages of things you want? Like, if you are going to do portobello mushrooms, do you ever run into a problem? Like, there's a shortage of something on the market right now. I can't think of what it is. I saw it on the news, and it really surprised me that they're in short supply. What is it?
Food?
No.
Pine nuts, maybe?
I can't think of it. But anyhow, do you ever run into that where you want to get is hard to get?
It's rare. You know, when you deal with wholesale, they try their best to supply so many different hotels or institutions or restaurants. So they try to do their best to get everything in stock. Obviously, some products are more seasonal than others. So, you know, you get the better quality of those products when you buy them in season. For example, I brought some falafels today, and that tends to be, I mean, falafels, yeah, exactly, falafels, but I make them actually with fresh fava beans and green English peas. So those tend to be more in season during the summer as opposed to right now. So, you know, the quality is maybe a little better when you make them during those seasons, tomatoes as well, or strawberries, or fresh vegetables or fruits.
Right, we're talking to Sam Benham from Toast Catering today. Say, are you taking applications for taste testers?
Sure, if you.
What you said? You're from Iran,
right?
And then where else did you?
I grew up in France.
So, France. I mean, we think of that as the food capital, maybe of the world, right? Where the
food is a big part
big
of the
deal,
culture,
right?
I would say.
Yeah. My kids and ex-wife have been there, and I've paid for it, but unfortunately, I've never been. It's a sad story. But anyhow, they regale me with all these wonderful stories of food that they've eaten in France. And how much of that cultural influence, you said falafel, it's kind of a Middle Eastern food. How much of influence from your childhood is there on the menu today, or are you just as interested in Japanese cuisine and Korean cuisine as you are from, you know, French cuisine?
I think I'm overall very experimental when it comes to food. I grew up, my mom, she would feed me everything, and I wasn't a picky eater, so that really helped me to develop maybe some sort of palate and you know, not be a picky and be a, as I said, you know, experimental with my food and my menu.
Yeah, I pretty much ate everything except lima beans. Don't know why, just lima beans.
And a lot of people don't like lima beans.
Yeah,
it's the texture.
Lima
bean. Yeah, it's the texture of them. I don't know why, and I don't usually get any. But anyhow.
But you definitely find some French and Italian, and since I was actually really close to the Italian border in Nice, south of France. So Italian, French, Persian menu. I do also have some Thai and some Indian and Mexican and American. So it's very eclectic menu.
And now Cajun.
And not Cajun.
So Toast is a catering company. And my guess is that you don't have a steady, you know, like daily contract to provide for 1,000 people. So you may have a, you know, two small weddings one day and then a huge banquet the next. So your need for people fluctuates up and down, in and out with the different orders you get. How in the world do you handle that?
Well, most of my staff are actually on call or, you know, part-time. So whenever I have events, I...
So maybe college students and you just have a big variety of people out there that you can call on?
Well, maybe for the wait stuff, it could be college students okay. that are doing that part, you know, on the
yeah,
side.
I guess for chefs and
for
cooks,
chefs,
it would
they
be
definitely
different.
Have some of them are actually way older than I am and have more experience than I do. So we, I'm pretty lucky, I would say, have a pretty good crew that helps me with my work and my events.
And you, I noticed that you have a wide variety of foods for all different kinds of budgets and, you know, small events up to very large events. And so if somebody wants to get a hold of Sam Benham at Toast Catering, you want to check him out at toastcatering.com, correct?
That's correct.
And just real quick, because we're out of time, Toast? Just
toast, like a wedding toast?
Yeah,
celebration.
Oh, that!
But it could be a French toast,
too. Oh, my gosh,
too,
why did I not think of that? I'm thinking of toast, like, I mean, I like toast, but I'm not sure I would, like, make it my logo for my company.
I thought maybe it was an acronym.
Toast. Okay. Toast.
Wow, okay. Toastcatering.com. Sam, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Good
thank
luck with this,
me.
And the food is fabulous. Truly
you're
fabulous.
Genius.
And we wouldn't say that if it weren't true. Give Al Arias a call, 619-296-2123. You've been listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Andrea Kay.
I'm Al Arias.
And remember, folks, we're the land of the free.
Because we are the home of the brave. Go be brave, folks. Bye-bye.